welcome to this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howell, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Hey, Jonathan, since Team Rainer, I'm speaking of Amy Jordan, Amy Thompson, Jonathan Howell, and me, have been doing the podcast and been doing the blog. There have been several topics that have created a lot of interest, engendered a lot of emotion. Mm-hmm. One of them is worship style.
Yeah.
It just continues to be an issue, even though I think worship wars are waning. I still think it's a hot issue, worship style. And the other one is this whole issue about the millennials and the relatively few of this largest generation in America's history who are Christians, much less going to church. So we decided to be really hot topic today, and we're going to talk about what?
Millennials and worship styles.
Wow, what a combination.
Well, you did a post recently on the blog, and it just absolutely took off. When I was preparing for the podcast, I was looking at it, 15,000 shares on Facebook.
Oh, my goodness.
Post. So it had over 100,000 views. It just really was one of our bigger posts that we've had recently, and there wasn't really anything too controversial about it, but it just it hit what people wanted to talk about. The millennials, as you talk about in the book with Jess, they really desire authenticity.
That is for certain. Let's give a little background on the millennials. And yeah, Jess Rainer, my youngest son, and I did a book on that a few years ago called The Millennials.
Good title.
Pretty original. But it was based on a research project that we commissioned Lifeway Research to do and interviewed 1,200 millennials. For you statistical nerds, that just means that the margin of error was very small, that the sample size was very significant, and that we believe our results were pretty accurate. And there are different ways that you can look at that. One, let's just talk about the population group. There are between 78 and 79 million millennials, live births in that date. My generation was the largest up until that point. There were 76 million live births of the baby boomers. So this is the largest generation in America's history. It's the most diverse generation in America's history. It's not predominantly Anglo. It'll be the first generation in America's history where the Anglos will not be in the majority. Mm. The Anglos will be the largest, but not in the majority. But from a Christian point of view, from a church point of view, this is the generation that is least represented in the Christian category. There are several ways that you can get at this understanding of how many Christians there are in a generational group. The worst way to do it is to say, are you a Christian?
Yes.
Because you're inevitably going to get a lot of people who say yes, because my great-grandfather was an elder or a deacon in a church. And that does not work. So we ask a series of doctrinal questions, mm-hmm, by our best estimates. And we will not hold this to be truth that surpasses all truth. We'll just say by our best estimates, we estimate that about only 15% of this generation is Christian, and only about 20% are attending a church. So we got some non-Christians attending church as well. So that's the background about this massive generation born between 1980 and 2000, and there are 78 to 79 million of them.
And you're looking at only about 11 to 12 million Christians based on the research.
That's good math, Jonathan. Good math.
I try. I actually had it written down. All right, so the thing we talked about recently about worship styles is you mentioned the worship wars kind of going away. Millennials, like any other generation, are really wanting to work with other generations. And when it comes to worship styles, they don't have a really preference on the style. They really want the rich content rather than the type of music, like the stylistic. They really want the words that they're singing to mean something.
Two of my friends that live in the Nashville area moved here not too long ago, Keith and Kristen Getty. I mentioned them in the blog post. One of the reasons I mentioned them is, one, they're just incredibly talented. And they're great composers, and they're great musicians. Kristen's a great singer. Keith is a great accompanist, and they're just incredibly talented. And they have really taken the Christian millennials by storm. Wherever you hear of millennials and how much they really like some type of worship leadership and worship music, the music of the Gettys tends to be mentioned at some point. What is it about the Gettys that the millennials like so much? That's rhetorical. I'm going to answer the question. What the millennials like about the Gettys so much is, yes, it's very beautiful music, but it is the deep and rich theological content. some will say, well, hymns are coming back. Well, in that sense, it is.
Yeah.
Contemporary hymnody is coming back through the Gettys and through others. But the overarching issue, the big issue is the millennials are looking more carefully at the words. Now, I think this is a reflection of the fact that the millennials are in a distinct minority.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a culture now where 8 out of 10 or more are not believers in Christ. And so they're looking at their faith more seriously than previous generations. And that includes the preaching of the word, that includes the singing of the music, that includes the worship, the corporate worship event itself. And so, you know, when I wrote that blog post several months ago that the worship wars are waning, some people were in total disbelief. Because they're in the middle of worship wars. But there are fewer of them than there were. And one of the reasons is the millennials are coming along and saying, hey, it's not so much the style of music as it is the content of the music.
Yeah.
And if you can have some hymns along with contemporary choruses that are rich in content, we're there with you.
Mm-hmm. And we released some research recently from Lifeway Research that indicated that millennials, they're the most likely generation to Google something that the pastor says. So pastors get up there and they spout off this statistic. And, you know, millennials are a little more skeptical than any other generation.
You reckon?
In the past.
A little more skeptical.
All right, I'm a lot more skeptical.
We need to call y'all. Are you a millennial?
I am.
Wow, I thought you were a little bit older.
No.
What year were you born?
80.
I'm
Sam, remember?
Okay, you're Sam's the age. Oldest millennial.
Yes. I'm in the millennials, though.
Okay, we got you in
about 10 months. But I was the same way. I mean, if a pastor says something that I kind of, you know, furrows my brow, I'm going to Google it. I'm going to pull the old Wikipedia out. I mean, I was doing that earlier on a podcast that we were recording earlier whenever we said something. I was Googling it just to find out what's going on with that. But I mean, that happens, and I know that it's because of the millennials' desire to know exactly what that means and to be able to identify with the richness of the content. And, you know, whether it be in the sermon or the song, they want that rich content.
The good news about the millennials is they don't take anything at face value. The bad news about the millennials is they don't take anything at face value.
It's a double-edged sword.
They're always asking the questions.
So we talked about rich content. Number two is they want authenticity, and that kind of ties into that content. The content's got to be rich and real, and they want the authentic worship service to be rich and real as well.
Yeah, the word authenticity can become cliche, but it's really not. There are several words that would describe the type of event and people to whom millennials look. One is authentic, whether it is a leader or a worship service. They feel like that in many of the churches they go to that the people in the pews or chairs and even those who are leading worship are just going through the motions.
Yeah, it's an attitudinal viewpoint.
Totally. And so they say, I'm not going to stay there because there's not real worship that is taking place. When they look to a leader in a positive way, it's because that leader is authentic. That leader is real. There's another word that is closely related to that, and that is transparent. We want to know that what we see is what we get. There's not some type of pretense. And so if they go into a worship service, and let's just go to the preaching and take that detour for just a moment, and they feel like that the preacher is one thing during the sermon and another thing in real life, they will turn that preacher off. They will not listen to that preacher. It's the same thing about the music. They want to be a part of music that has not only that rich theological content that we mentioned earlier, but that those who are participating in worship are authentically participating. They truly are a part of the worship experience, in whatever way that means.
And that kind of ties into what you talked about in Church Member and the I Am a Church Member book with people wanting a high view of church membership, a high view of what the church does, and in every aspect, whether that be in singing and preaching. People want a attitude of it is about God, not about me. And that kind of spills over into this point in millennials.
Yeah, this whole generation is smaller in number, absolutely. But what this generation is reminding us is that our faith is a serious faith. And they're making us older people, look back upon how we're doing things and look at how we're doing things now and saying, are you really doing that sincerely? Are you really doing that with authenticity? And I think it's healthy for our churches. There are quite a few who would disagree and saying it's a disruptive thing. But I want to tell you, if you are in a church where the going through the motions, and however that is described, the millennials are not going to be there for very long.
And the final point is that the millennials want quality. So they want the richness of the content. They want an authentic heart, an authentic attitude, but they want it done really well.
Yeah, and this is the iTunes generation. This is well past the television mm-hmm. generation. This is the generation that can have music immediately with the highest quality. I was listening to another podcast, one of the podcasts I listen to on a regular basis, and they got into the subject of quality of equipment, musical equipment, speakers, and things that we listen to. They were specifically talking about microphones uh-huh. in this case. I think it was a podcast on podcast.
Wow, that's a nerdy podcast.
That wasn't, but
we have really good microphones, by the way. I just want to point that out. The viewers can't see these. These microphones are outstanding.
So what I learned in this podcast that I was listening to about podcasts is that the price of quality equipment has dropped dramatically, but at the same time, the quality has gone up dramatically.
Yeah.
And so now anybody has access.
You can get better stuff cheaper.
I'm holding my hand an iPhone.
Yes.
And with the exception of needing an external mic, I can do a video with my iPhone mm-hmm. that's as good a quality as I need.
Yes.
Obviously not top-notch quality. All I would need is an external mic. So this is a generation that has had quality music, quality sound, quality equipment, and they walk into a worship center and there's an old creaky piano and organ and people going through the motions, as we indicated earlier, and it does not have to be expensive, but it does have to be real and it does have to be quality. And I can tell you, if you're in a church of 20 or 30, if you really put your effort into it, you can have a quality worship service.
I found that we've kind of been spoiled here in Nashville. We live in the music
yeah,
city.
We are.
There is no reason at all for a church in this town to not have quality music, because literally there are people in every church that are professional musicians. I mean, your son Jess at his church is a chart topping country music singer.
Josh Turner.
Yeah, sitting in the pews there.
Or yeah.
Not pews, I guess it's the
chairs
in the auditorium.
But and my church is Brad Paisley.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere you go in this town, there are top notch musicians, top notch people. So, you know, we're a little spoiled here in Nashville. I get that. And it was kind of neat moving here because you see that. But I've been to churches all over the country. And they're talented musicians everywhere.
And these musicians are looking for opportunities
yes.
as well. Not necessarily paid opportunities. They're just looking for opportunities to use the gift that God has given them.
One other thing that goes with the quality, I think, is we've seen the change in Christian radio. On the radio now, you listen to songs and they play songs that people sing in church, which probably didn't happen in the past. I mean, there was no hymn radio.
Yeah,
back in 1980.
There was a dichotomy. You had contemporary yeah. Christian radio, and then you had different music.
Yeah. And now those are kind of blended.
Yeah.
So when somebody starts singing Oceans by Hillsong United, we know what that sounds like because we hear it on the radio.
Right.
And whenever somebody who, I won't say that they're not as good or not as talented as those people are, but if it doesn't sound like what we're used to hearing, then regardless of our attitude toward it, it just... something doesn't sit right with us.
Let me give you one of my old examples. You know, I have to go way back to talk about my churches. And I'm going to give two illustrations, and one is current and one is ancient. The current, I've been preaching at a local church for a few consecutive Sundays since they've been without a pastor, Clearview mm-hmm. Church.
And, great church in Franklin.
In Franklin, Tennessee. And I was looking at the praise group and the instrumentalists who were up there, and one of the lead singers was I'd never seen this. She was the really providing leadership in the vocal part, and she had a stand up bass, a full bass
huh.
while she was singing.
Very cool.
And she was really, really good. And so I asked the worship leader after it was over, I said, "Is she a member of the church?" I think he said yes. I could be corrected on that. And he said, "Google her." I Googled her name, and she has this incredible band, bluegrass band. She tours all over the nation. Wish I could remember her name, and I'll give her a plug. So anyway, that was my first illustration about quality music. But I want to go back to my first church, Southern Indiana.
Yep. First Church of Merle.
The Church of Merle, because he was the deacon body, yep. And he was the search committee, and he was the elder board, and he was the custodian. And church voted to call me 6-1. I know some of the listeners have heard that story. That was the actual vote, the actual number of people who were there, 7 people, and I did not get a unanimous vote. Music was terrible, as you can imagine.
Merle didn't do the music.
No, but Merle's wife did.
Okay.
And love her dearly, but I think she skipped piano lessons and just was not that.
Nellie Joe plays piano. She could have.
Nellie Joe plays piano, but she just does not like to play in front of people. So she didn't even volunteer that she was. Well, I did not do this intentionally. I'm not that smart. But as I started visiting around the community, and as the community began to hear a little bit more about our church, I just asked people, "Do you play an instrument? Do you sing?" And I'd bring them into the church, and all of a sudden the quality was incredible, at least relative to what we had. And so the quality of the music went up. And for the listener, this was in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And for the listener, this was a rural church that had 7 people when I went there. And it was not Nashville, and it was not Brad Paisley or Josh Turner sitting next to you. It was just people in the community. There are good musicians all mm-hmm. over the place. The quality of worship can improve if you work at it.
And the reason that the quality of worship, I think, kind of needs to be as best as it can is because the worship and, you know, the quality and everything that we talked about, the content, the authenticity of the attitude and the quality of the worship, that kind of sets the stage for the preaching and the proclaiming of God's word.
That's right.
And if people are either A, not enjoying it, or B, you know, we talk about the preference-driven church, but there's a difference between being preference-driven and just being turned off by poor music and worship. It sets the attitude, it sets the tone for the sermon coming after it.
Exactly. They would not expect the preacher of the day to get up and be totally unprepared and lousy in delivery, and they want to know that that pastor has done the homework to deliver that sermon.
All right, so say a pastor's out there and he notices there's either a hole in the rich content or the authenticity or the quality of the worship in his church. How can he address that? I guess without, you know, hurting feelings of the music guy or girl, whoever's leading the music. And how does he make it better? How does he improve it without stepping on toes, without making those difficult decisions even more difficult?
If I were a pastor and I was in a church where the quality may be lacking and the content may not be present, the first thing I would do is I would include the worship leaders in a task force, whatever you would want to call it. I'd say, let's get together. We think that this is so important. You people are so important in the leadership of it. Let's talk about what we can do to make certain the preaching is better, to make certain the worship's better, and start taking
Don't
the
single it out. So you say, we're going to raise everything.
We're going to raise everything and include them in the process. I've done that. I've been there, and I've seen other pastors that do that. And once they know that the leadership of the church really cares about the worship, it really cares about the music, not only in terms of quality, but in terms of content as well, they will step up their game. And at the very least, you'll see it taken to another notch or two. It may not be perfect, but it will improve.
You would also probably say that it's an imperative that the music minister or whoever that is, the music leader, worship leader, and the pastor meet on a weekly basis to plan.
There should
Sunday
be
mornings.
Communication that has taken place. As I indicated, I've been preaching for several weeks in a row at a local church, and though I am not physically meeting with the worship mm-hmm. leader, we are communicating electronically.
About, so you and Michael, y'all email back and forth.
Back and forth, the executive pastor and I do, and so we're on the same page. We know the theme, and we work together.
And what about the authenticity part? Because that seems that's kind of more of a heart issue, an attitudinal issue. How does the pastor address that with the people who maybe, you know, leading worship on Sunday morning?
Here's what I found. The more you put into it, the more authentic the worship becomes. So if it becomes a perfunctory attitude where people are just, hey, let's throw something together, the worship doesn't become authentic. But when you bring worship leaders together, when you bring the worship team together, and you say, we're going to raise it to the next level, they lead the entire congregation to become more aware of the need for true worship, and It happens. The more you put into it, the more God honors it.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by P&H Publishing Group and the book Millennials. The Millennials is based on over 1,200 interviews with millennials that aim to better understand the millennials personally, professionally, and spiritually. For more information on the millennials, visit lifeway.com. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
One area that we didn't address, Jonathan, and I'll just say this briefly in closing. Millennials want authenticity. They want rich content, and they do want a quality worship service. But if their worship war is going on, they walk.
They go.
They are
they
not
don't want the fighting.
They will not spend time listening to people argue about worship style, and they'll find another church.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe online at iTunes.com and visit us online at TomRainer.com.